Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Annie.
And I am bent on destruction.
Don't you mean bent on deconstruction?
Oh, well, that too.
Well, at least I am bent on deconstruction. I'm kind of dragging you into this kicking and screaming, in a way. You have not been wanting to talk about this faith stuff for a long time. And we were deep into Christianity the entirety of our dating relationship and most of our married years. And we're at the point now where at least I am really examining things and looking back at how fucked up our relationship was because we were trying to do things biblically. And yikes. We live in the Midwest.
We live in the Midwest.
Upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of staying anonymous. Not that anyone in our lives will actually find this podcast.
Right.
But I wouldn't want anyone to track us down anyway.
Yeah.
Because we're bearing our souls here. We are not experts. I was never in ministry.
Right.
I never attended seminary. I did attend Christian school for several years. I've got stories about that. But we were certainly enthusiasts. And I would say, I would venture to guess we were devouter than average.
I certainly thought so.
And one thing I've been hearing in the deconstruction community is that the people who were the most committed Christians are the ones who are deconstructing the hardest. So we're not experts. Why would anyone want to listen to us? There is an absolute proliferation of ex-evangelical and ex-Christian and deconstruction-themed podcasts out there.
A deluge?
Yeah. So what's unique about our perspective, if anything?
Partly because of, I don't know about you, but definitely I have had a roller coaster of a faith ride.
That's a good way to put it.
Thanks.
You can even track the when you get to the top of the hill and when you're doing the corkscrew and then the part where you're
puking at the end.
But I have found all the podcasts so helpful. Sometimes it just comes down to hearing other people's stories.
Okay.
And recognizing that there are patterns here, and I'm not alone. We're also not experts in the sense that we have deconstructed and come out on the other side. I've been in the middle of it, but not seriously engaging it because it's hard. So the podcast, while I would love it if people could identify with it, it's also for me a replacement for counseling. No, just kidding. In reality, I'm too embarrassed to talk about religion in counseling sessions.
Hmm. So let's talk about it to people we've never met before.
That's, yeah, people who don't know who we are.
Oh, yes, that too.
Who don't have to look at our faces. But yeah, I'm super embarrassed about the stuff that I did in the past and the stuff I believed. Ugh, so cringe.
Yes, there is much cringe.
So we're kind of verbally processing on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone back and listened to the last episode we recorded, and it was really hard.
Hard?
It created a lot of anxiety for me, actually, because I was hearing myself say things that were mean to God.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I even dared to say that I don't know if Jesus is all he's cracked up to be either. I was hit with this sense of doom. Like waiting for God to strike me with a lightning bolt.
Smite me, O great smiter, to quote the great Jim Carrey.
Yeah, and the fact that I'm facing these things directly now, putting them into actual words that I'm saying out loud, there's something about that that has this sense of finality.
In many ways, I know that you have been ahead of me on the deconstruction process.
So do you think it would be safe to say that I totally had a head start on you spiritually?
Zing.
What's the context of that quote?
The context of that quote is I said that to you when we were dating, specifically in the context of, boy, there isn't any good way to put it, me feeling secure in being the spiritual leader of our home.
I think it's just because you went to more church than me.
More church and more
dramatic.
Fundamentalist or fringe or dramatic church.
More dramatic church / cult.
Yes.
And it was interesting to hear what I said in the last episode because the way I reacted brought me straight back to my fundamentalist days, where I felt like I was listening to a stranger say these things and judging them for being not committed enough, or they're just selfish and they don't want to acknowledge that they're sinful. It's too hard for them to humble themselves. All this stuff. It's weird how easy it is to slip back into that mental framework of judgment.
Yeah.
This time turning it on myself while also knowing that the framework I'm using to judge myself is bullshit.
I recently read in a parenting book an interesting perspective on being self or having that selfish versus selfless tension. You feel like being a good parent requires you to be selfless and to serve your kids. Whereas if you are trying to take care of yourself, make sure that you don't fall apart on them, you feel selfish.
Yes, totally.
And I mean, I know I personally had a lot of, in a non-parenting sense, that confusion in my life, selfless versus selfish, when it's really a false binary, you know.
Yeah.
The most important way to take care of your kids is to take care of yourself,
to
make sure that you are all you can be as a person.
Yeah, to be a healthy parent physically and mentally and emotionally, so you're not shoving that crap onto your children.
Right.
And there was another part of old me popping up saying, this anxiety you feel, what if it's the Holy Spirit nudging you? What if this is God telling you, Annie, come back into the fold.
Come back to the fold.
You've gone astray, but you've gone too far. It's not too... Yeah. Anyway. That's scary. That's scary to feel that pull that strongly at this point in my life where I'm on the precipice of moving out of the faith entirely. Indoctrination is a hard thing to change. So, was it the Holy Spirit nudging me?
I would say that it probably wasn't. The concerns and the issues and the things that we are talking about are not trivial.
These are all real, legitimate concerns.
They're real, legitimate concerns. That doesn't make it wrong to feel what you feel.
The best indoctrination strategy is teaching people that they can't trust themselves.
Oh, yeah.
In the midst of experiencing this anxiety, you got a book for me from the library.
Yes.
And I read it and I told you, I think this is changing my life. What was the book? Why did you pick it out for me?
So the book that I got for you is titled Faith After Doubt by...
Brian McLaren.
I thought this Faith After Doubt book might be something Annie was interested in, so I pulled it off the shelf. She'll read it and she'll either love it or she will hate it, and either way she'll tell me why.
And I'll admit I was skeptical, because the title is Faith After Doubt, and I'm at a place where I'm like, who needs faith? Maybe I don't want faith after doubt.
You're more in the reverse place of doubt after faith, right?
Well, here's where we get into some of the interesting arguments in the book.
Ah.
McLaren distinguishes between faith and belief.
Hmm.
And so it's fairer to say that I am experiencing doubt after belief. And I was a little worried that this was going to be one of those books written by a Christian who says, it's okay to doubt, it's normal to doubt, but at the end of the day, come back to Jesus. And that is not the message I want to hear right now. There is no turning back. I might be looking out the rearview window, but I am not turning around.
If you go back to faith, it will look a lot different.
And a lot better,
mm-hmm.
I think. At least this book gave me hope of that. One of the big points he makes early in the book is that doubt is a good thing. I had never gotten that level of permission to doubt. It's not just permission, it's encouragement.
Hmm. Yep.
So tell me what doubt means to you, or how you were taught about it, or its opposite, certainty.
Well, that's not a small topic at all, is it?
That's why I gave you advance notice I was going to ask you about this, so you could think of an answer. Like, at what point did you start to wonder, maybe the world wasn't created in 7 days?
Yes, the young earth interpretation of Genesis. So, I, for a period, was one of those... thanks to Chick Tracts.
Oh my goodness.
Which could have their own episode because they are
yes.
so deplorable.
Do you still have them? Oh my gosh, that would be the best. Anyway, he was this illustrator. He did these comic strips.
Mm-hmm. Comic books.
With religious lessons.
Yep.
Very hardcore.
Very hardcore, very fundamental.
But yeah, it was that fundamentalist subculture that really discouraged doubt and mm-hmm. put certainty on a pedestal.
One of the comic books that I had was, I remember it was titled Big Daddy, and it was all about the problems with evolution. Oh, boy.
And you swallowed it.
Oh, I mean, it was printed, so it had to be true,
but
right?
Why? What drew you to that? Was it the air of certainty? Was it the idea that this is a counter-cultural...
Secret knowledge, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Was part of the draw.
The superiority of having the quote-unquote truth.
Yeah. You know, that stuck through high school, and as soon as I said something to friends about it, I learned that that wasn't a real smart idea. Good way to lose friends.
They mocked you? They should have.
Oh, yes.
Good.
Oh, yes.
Was that what shook your faith? I should say your belief in that? Or did it just...
It just kind of put it back.
Galvanize you?
Maybe a little of both. But I would say that it pushed it more into the background for me. Came to the realization that, you know, it is not in line with what I know about God. That he would put dinosaur bones in the ground to test our faith. That is a stupid God. And so I was like, okay, well, young earth creationism is clearly not where I am.
But what was the moment that tipped you from belief into doubt. Or I should say, it sounds like it was a pretty quick transition.
It was not a pretty quick transition. So
your belief was steadily chipping away like a paleontologist chipping out dinosaur bones that have been hidden by Satan. I'm not making this up. You know I'm not.
Shovel-wielding Satan worshippers.
So it was kind of a long, gradual process.
It was a long, gradual process. I was still, like, not fully willing to let go of critiques against evolution. I know that one reason I gave regularly was that the survival of the fittest is not in line with what I know about God.
Yeah, I grew up in a much more fundamentalist denomination than you did. First, a charismatic when I was quite young, and then we moved to an E-free church, evangelical. And I spent years in a Christian private school where we were not taught about evolution. We were taught a straw man version, a straw ape, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then finally in high school, I had decided to go out to the big, scary
public school.
Anti-Jesus public school and discovered that everyone there identified as Christian anyway. So it was like not scary in the least. But at any rate, I took 2 years of biology that was on top of a year of creationist biology. The actual scientific science wasn't enough for me to fully abandon my belief in creationism. And what I did was I thought to myself, well, now I know both sides. And I'm super smart and good because I can kind of hold on to both of them at the same time, but I'm not really going to commit one way or the other. And that actually is, in a sense, a good description of doubt, because the word doubt comes from the same word as like double or duo or die. So two. Essentially.
You have two competing ideas.
Exactly. Holding two positions simultaneously. Not quite sure where you fall. But your comment about the young earth creationist belief reminded me of this quote from Brian McLaren's book. He said, "I feel I have to choose between opening my mind and saving my soul." So the way I was taught about doubt and certainty is that it's a black and white thing. And I was taught that there was a slippery slope. You'd think if the earth was flat, there wouldn't be any slippery slopes.
You would think.
I was told that if I gave up on my belief in an inerrant Bible, and it was just a slippery slope to rejecting more and more truths about God. And guess what? They were exactly right. And it's okay. Of course they try to gatekeep at that level of extremeness. Never does anyone explore what the slippery slope on the other side looks like. Like, what depths will you go to if you take your core theological beliefs to their natural extreme?
Yep.
And what do you get?
So then you would be the happy crusader.
Then you participate in an insurrection.
Right.
The certainty thing, I don't know that it was ever explicitly said out loud that you need to be certain of your beliefs, but it was implicit. So an example is I went to church camp 1 year in middle school.
Yep.
And we would always have this quiet time. And they gave us a little survey or a little worksheet. And one of the questions was, what percent certain are you that you're going to heaven? And I remember looking at that question and being like, this is so unfair. Why do they need to know? And I felt like I had to put 100 or else somebody would be worried about me and try to...
Oh, she isn't a Christian?
Get me to that 100%. And this wasn't even the question of what percent belief do you have in God. It was just, you know, it was taken for granted that I believed in God and I believed in heaven. Another example, this isn't spiritual per se, but at that Christian school, it was, would it have been 2000? The presidential election was coming up. Mm-hmm. Bush versus Gore. And our class did a little vote. And then the teacher read off the votes. And it was Bush, 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 Bush. And we all chuckled because the implication was that, well, of course we want George Bush to become president.
He's a man of God, right?
Like, anyone who would have dared to vote for Al Gore would have been...
witch hunted.
No joke. And that's not to say that I wanted to vote for Al Gore. I was pretty young at that point. Nevertheless, I still feel fully responsible for the outcome of the 2000 presidential election.
No... that is 100% on the incompetency of that penis of a state, Florida.
I mean, I wasn't even old enough to vote. I had so many of those contradictions as I was growing up. Like, how could a good God send people to hell? How could God really have created the earth in 7 days 2,000 years ago? And how could people have lived to be 600 years old? And the answer is, there was a canopy of water above the atmosphere, and that's where the global flood came from.
I mean, clearly.
And before that, it created like a hyperbaric chamber, so people were super healthy and could live to be like 800, like Methuselah.
Yeah, 969.
This is the stuff I was taught in the Christian school, but I digress. So lots of these contradictions at both an intellectual level, like this doesn't line up with science, and on a moral level, like this doesn't line up with my deepest intuitions of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And yet, in those moments of kind of trying to hold on to two beliefs at once, the act of defaulting to... the party line of defaulting to the, quote, biblical perspective.
Yep.
I thought that was faith. I thought that faith meant believing something even though the evidence is contrary to it.
Yes.
And it amounted to a deliberate stupidity. Like deliberately choosing to deny the use of my supposedly God-given intellectual capacities in favor of these ridiculous beliefs.
Well, I mean, that's because your God-given intellectual abilities were defiled by the fall.
Oh, is that what happened? But again, it's that if they can break your trust in yourself, if they can teach you that intellect is evil...
then you will have to rely on given positions.
Yeah, what the authorities say.
Exactly.
What a sad way to understand faith, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the stupider the belief, the stronger I felt in terms of, I'm a good Christian. I'm really being faithful. Like, this is a
really stupid thing for me to believe, and so it's a demonstration of my faith.
Yes, yes, it shows how committed I am. And in retrospect, I'm, again, humiliated. Like, I remember believing that to be gay was a sin, right? And that was a really unpopular belief. Maybe not in our upper Midwestern university town. But it was unpopular to the point that I felt that kind of chafing of positions. Instead of going with what I... deep inside felt to be the right and just thing to believe, which is that we're all equal, I continued to assert that to be gay was sinful. In reality, that was me being a hateful person, but at the time it felt like, look how committed I am, that I'm holding on to this unpopular idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the more persecution I get for it, or the more pushback I get, is all the more evidence that I'm a strong Christian. And I'm not going to bend to the whims of culture.
I was right there with you.
So how did you try to assuage your doubts? Did you just hunker down more? Or did you try to seek out resolution or answers or advice?
I would say that I was really good at cognitive dissonance.
I thought you were going to say confirmation bias, which is also true.
I always, even before, you know, political and religious interest ticked up in my life, I was always a rebel.
The actual content of your beliefs didn't matter as long as you were rebelling against the establishment.
I had on my first blog, which shall remain nameless, I put that I have a serious problem with authority.
Oh my gosh, and you were wondering why you weren't getting job offers.
Anyway, not the point. The point is, even though, like, Christianity is built to be authoritarian, I knew my identity was rebellious. I knew that was me. To do a name drop that most people won't get, Five Iron Frenzy was a big influencer on my earliest Christianity. Every CD that they made had, like, a protest song, basically saying, our government treats Native Americans like shit. That's bad. They wouldn't have said the S word.
This was a Christian ska band, right?
Christian ska band in the 90s and into the early 2000s.
You were okay with cognitive dissonance because there was this part of you that didn't want to believe the party line, but also part of you that did, and you were just kind of comfy with that.
I just had to assign it in a way that I deemed best. They even did an anti-police brutality song. I took them in and I internalized them. So I had these kernels of things that I feel very strongly about now, that I had right.
But they were kind of buried back then.
They were kind of buried.
It was not popular to be Christian and anti-cop. It still isn't.
Right. I mean, my belief system was sort of like a shit Sunday, you know. There was good stuff in there, but there was also a lot of crap.
So I had asked you, how did you try to assuage the doubt?
Assuage the doubt.
You just didn't.
I just didn't. I didn't fully assuage doubt. I, in a sense, redirected it. Like, there were things that I already had that I was critical about, you know, the culture for. And so I had doubt there. And see, I can question things.
And for me, I had a harder time with that cognitive dissonance. I always sought out answers. I took a class in apologetics.
Ooh.
At the time, I remember feeling not fully satisfied with the answers it was giving me, but it seemed so systematic, and mm-hmm. I was the kind of person who appreciated argument and debate anyway. I was in debate in high school, but I thought to myself, maybe this is where I need to live. Maybe I need to live amongst these brainy apologetics, systematic theology type folks, because that's the only way to reconcile the fact that I am brainy and I want to be, and yet I'm living in a world where we are asked continually to completely throw our mental faculties out the window.
Lean not on your own understanding.
Ugh. Triggering. But
sorry.
No, so apologetics, I read all the Lee Strobel, all the Josh McDowell, all the C.S. Lewis, Francis Schaeffer, all of this. And it was always, it was partly that confirmation bias piece coming into play. Like, I went into it thinking, I want to keep believing these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, to let go of any one belief is that slippery slope. And mm-hmm. I could lose my community and I would go astray and...
lose your salvation.
Exactly. And then the other source I went to is I would try to talk to people about it. And I remember, actually, this was post-college when we were living in Big City and attending Big City church plant. I remember talking to one of the pastors there,
mm-hmm.
Jason. And I remember telling him that I always had this onslaught of doubts and it was starting to feel like it was about to overflow, whatever. And how should I handle it? And how should I pray? And what should I repent of? And all this. And what he said was, yeah, I wonder all those things too. I have doubts too.
Hmm.
And I remember thinking,
how can the pastor...
what the hell? You're a pastor. This is not helping. Right?
Yep.
I mean, I know that he said it with the intent of, like, showing solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, the fact that he was actually admitting that to me as a pastor...
it was big.
It was not the kind of denomination that welcomed that kind of thinking.
Mm.
And incidentally, he wasn't there for much longer, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But that was encouraging in one direction, but not in the other. But we'll get back to Brian McLaren for our next chat, because he actually did some research, so you know I'm going to love that.
Ooh.
Lots of reading and integrating of theories and stuff to lay out a set of life stages that represent how we kind of move out of belief into doubt and then into harmony, which is where I want to be. Totally not there yet. But I think it would be cool to chat about those life stages and see if we can map them onto the kinds of churches we attended. Because like you said, our spiritual lives have been a roller coaster.
So hopefully we've gotten through all of the hard part now. Huh?
A denominational roller coaster.
Oh yeah.
And we'll pick up there later.
It sounds good.
Thanks.